that extending key was that moment, that head nod said, like, I won't come home without you and you won't come home without me. And that's the part for me that created that field where you could do superhuman things with very average humans, because each person was in full surrender to each other, right? Each person knew that they were committed to each other more than their own individual life. And then paradoxically, because you're now functioning holistically as a team.
Welcome to the Business of Doing Business. I'm your host, Dwayne Kerrigan. With 35 years in business and close to 30 ventures across 12 industries, I've seen a lot. Amid the celebrity allure of entrepreneurship, many exceptional entrepreneurs remain shadowed. Here, I team up with these hidden talents to unveil their challenges and successes. Dive in with me to unearth entrepreneurial gems, learn from our experiences, and get educated. Buddy, what's going on, man? Welcome to the podcast, Kirk Cronin, our most listened to podcast, actually, just by the way. You are our second podcast and you're the most listened to in the history of our podcast so far.
So excited.
And I'm super excited and super grateful for you coming back. Thank you very much, bro. I'm just curious, like, how's life going and what is happening with you? We had a couple of your friends on, Rich Devaney, another SEAL team member that I think you served with. Well, I know you served with.
Served with and went through Green Team with, yes.
So I don't know if you've read his book, but his book is legit. Like, it's really interesting. I actually just had a conversation with somebody about attributes and what he's doing. I really am a big fan of it, actually.
I just listened to the podcast you did with him, and so now I have to dive in to follow.
Honestly, the book is worth it. I really do recommend it to everybody. Not that this is a Rich Devaney podcast, but I think it's interesting because you've got all these people that and typically were trained to focus on skills, you know, skills, but it's, and then when you start to look at people's attributes and what they bring to the table and how he lays it out in his book, I believe there was 21 of them, but I can't remember off the top of my head. It makes a lot of sense from the perspective of, especially when you're training somebody and you're or at work or in play in your personal life, you know, you have this tendency to, I guess I'm pre-framing myself, but especially in the past, to judge people based on their skill set. But it's like, skill is my responsibility to train, that I can influence, but I can't really teach somebody to have courage or I mean, you can do that loosely, but they have to have a fundamental subset of it. And I think in their inherent consciousness, if you will, or whatever you want to call it. So anyways.
You're playing deeply into my new favorite quotes from Siddhartha. I think it's like a 120-year-old book, but the quote talked about wisdom. You know, it's a wisdom cannot be passed on. Knowledge can be passed on, but wisdom, you know, must be experienced. And so I love that, because I'm going through that right now with my kids specifically, where I'm like, doesn't this make sense? And I realized, like, oh, I'm trying to impart the 47 years of wisdom that I've had. And so now I'm trying to get to the point where, how do I impart experiences on them? So at least if they get to a situation, they can have 30 or 40% of that experience before. So they have some context when they're making it. So it's not just a shot in the dark. Absolutely love that distinction.
What was that book called?
Siddhartha.
Siddhartha. I've never even heard of that book, to be honest with you.
No, it's fantastic. It got recommended to me to a friend, and I went to it. I was at my mentor, Tom and Kathy Crum's house for Magic of Skiing. I'm like, I've got this whole new book I just saw. And they're like, that's over 100 years old, Kurt. It was had some amazing distinctions.
Siddhartha.
I'll give you that full quote because I thought it was worth it. It was 1922, so 102 years old. It said, wisdom cannot be passed on. Wisdom which a wise man tries to pass on to someone always sounds like foolishness. Knowledge can be conveyed, but not wisdom. It can be found. It can be lived. It is possible to be carried by it. Miracles can be performed with it, but it cannot be expressed in words and taught.
That is awesome. You got this book, was recommended to you and you read it. What were the biggest takeaways for you, like, as you were kind of trying to process? Because that's a powerful quote. I mean, and it's so very true. I never really thought about it that way. So I'm curious what your whole takeaway was. And was there some shifts? If we brought it up, it probably means something.
Absolutely. I'd reference another book that you and I both read. I think you recommended to me, Brian Singer's Surrender Experiment. And so, you know, Siddhartha to me was another extension of that, where can I fully surrender to whatever's unfolding? And I thought Siddhartha was fantastic for the hero of the story, you know, ends up going through multiple different lives of transformation, each one taking a gleaning additional context and experience from it. And so that that for me has been fascinating. What I'm very present to right now, if you said there's one word for my 2024 year, it'd be awareness. And I love Tim Galloway's quote, like, awareness begins the curative process. And so I'm trying to understand, what am I aware of? What am I not aware of? You know, that part's obscure to me until the moment I am aware, but awareness starts like a whole new process of learning and discovery. And so I'm very aware I have allowed suffering for long periods of my life because I refused to accept or surrender to the circumstances that were happening. And only 5, 10, 15 years later do I look back and say, wow, that was all happening for me. But I suffered for those 15 years because I didn't have the courage to say, you know what, I'm going to accept this right now. And it's taken years, more than decades sometimes, to then lean in and accept things at a completely different level. And so that's my mission now, is can I accept and be aware of something the instant that it happens, or as close as possible, so that I can glean the lessons right away and not have to suffer for long periods of time waiting for me to find out, oh, this is what worked out. I mean, to me, that it's the embodiment of one of my favorite Broadway shows we did in brought it to New York last year, Back to the Future. And so Back to the Future, of course, everybody knows the movie. The movie is all about Marty. And in this case, if you're making a musical, it has to be, you can't let the audience be ahead of you. So this is all about Doc, and it's Here's to the Dreamers. And it's fascinating because what's the impact on your life if somebody came back from 30 years in the future and said, everything that you try in your life works? How different would you approach everything you do if you had that certainty, that clarity that oftentimes we don't have? So can I live with the clarity and certainty every single day that I'm on the path? When many times as an entrepreneur, and you've referenced this many times in your podcast, the hardest part about being an entrepreneur is I don't know if everything I'm trying to do is going to be worth anything. I don't know if I'm going to make it. And so that energy detracts most of the productive energy that you would have used to get to the outcome. And so trying every single day to live into a deeper sense of surrender of, okay, this is happening for me, not to me.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about a lot of things here. There's a couple I want to get back to, but just on that note, it's, well, when you talk about, you know, the entrepreneurial journey, I think sometimes my experience is I just anticipate that most of the shit that I'm about to do is not going to work out, right? And I got to be able to, and even that wisdom that you spoke about earlier is like, you have to have that wisdom or that experience sometimes to realize, okay, this is not working. And, you know, the awareness of, and to me, the awareness is the initial part of growth. Without awareness, it is very hard to transition to growth. And whether
it's not impossible, right? I'm not even aware that something needs to change. Yes.
Right. And whether it's in your personal life or whether it's in business. And I think that awareness piece from an entrepreneurial standpoint is, you know, when you are embarking on this entrepreneurial journey and you're doing a startup, I mean, there's a difference between going in and running a company that's been around, it's got systems and processes and it's got people and they've got experiences and they can relate back and, you know, use that awareness to be able to go, oh, well, you know what, we've been through this kind of before. Maybe we shouldn't go down this path. We should open that door because the last time we opened that door, there was a big monster back there, like, and he ate us. It's a really great topic that you bring up, because especially for the entrepreneurs out there, but I mean, again, it's like anything, you can relate any piece of your life to this whole process. But I'm curious, from my question, I think falls on me right now for you is, you know, what was your experience about starting to understand awareness? Like, you had made a statement, and I don't think I could probably repeat it, but 10, 15 years ago, you had talked about, for lack of better words, and please, I'm just trying to clarify, but this difficulty or struggle in being aware about certain things. I'm curious if you could just share your experience of how you've kind of opened, whether it's your mind, your heart, your emotions, towards being more aware, and what were some of those practices, because I think it's a very interesting conversation, because people live their life sometimes in darkness and they suffer. I think you use the word suffer. They suffer as a result of it. And, you know, they just can't see because they have no awareness.
It's an epic and expansive question. I would say, I would start with just my experience of raising my kids, right? It's fascinating to see them start with pure joy and bliss and excitement. And of course, upset the moment they're upset, but it's fascinating as we learn to adopt the patterns of the world we're born into. Then for me, like, it was joining the military. It was high school into the military. And as I joined the military, like, okay, here's how you win in the military. Here's the patterns and rituals that are required to be successful in this domain. The fascinating part, I think you're talking about increasing your awareness when all of a sudden you realize you get into a new domain, you go, wow, totally different. Like when I left my small farm town and I landed up at the Naval Academy and in my little farm town, things moved at the pace that crops grew. And so like it was a very different style. Then all of a sudden I got to the Naval Academy, people are screaming about shining my shoes and shining my name tags. I'm like, dude, relax. It's not a big deal, right? And that didn't go over well in that environment, right? And then I flew to Asia. I'm like, oh, that's not the Midwest or the East Coast. And I flew to the Middle East. And so part of that awareness has been the joy of getting to get into many different circumstances and going, oh, wow. Ideally, each one of those is helping me to level my assumptions so that I can encounter you in a conversation and not my projection of you based on my limited paradigm. And so that's been my quest, is how do I continue to be curious? I think one of my friends said curiosity is a superpower, and I love that because it allows me to continue to learn new things on a continuous basis. And so one of the critical ones that I was referencing earlier about suffering for 15 years was when I left the SEALs, I had felt a calling. Like I'd worked out of the embassy. I'm like, oh, wow, I've got unconscious comments in military operations, but business and policy is how you can proactively drive change. And so I felt that calling to shift from a reactive side where I was an instrument of policy into the proactive side where now I could ideally, in business, what I love is I get to create solutions for crisis that I can see before the crisis ever occurs. So I'm ready when it's here. Like that to me is the greatest ability to proactively act instead of reactively act. And so I started to feel that calling, but candidly, I was so deep inside of the system, I don't know if I ever would have had the vibrational energy to leave were it not for at the same time, a couple of events happened, like ended up my son's birth I missed because I was on deployment, right? Which is a crucial life-changing event. My wife almost died on the table. It was a critical event for us. And then I had been living out of the embassy and said, look, I really think if I'm going to be a serve at the highest level, I have to do business and policy as well, right? I have to, and so you'll laugh. I said, well, how do you learn that? You go to school. So I'm like, well, I'll go to Dartmouth for my MBA. I'll go to Harvard for an MPA, and then I'll be able to contribute more because I've learned it in academia. And, you know, I got into those programs and the deal with the Navy was if I got in, they'd let me go. And then they didn't. And so had it not been for kind of that breach, I don't know that I ever would have had the activation energy to leave. And so like between both the call, you and I have played with for years, never leave something, always move toward. So both the call to move toward and that activation energy and being pulled away from were two of the things that were crucial to kind of like that first sense of awareness. And then from there, it becomes like, I love in general, how do I get centered? When you said, what are the rituals? You know, that the reason I've spent 14 years learning from my mentors, I found that he was the most embodied example of someone that could get centered and then extend ki, right? Extend ki. We all have ki life force, that energy that none of us asked for, but we've been given this incredible gift in this life. And then be able to extend ki around so I can have extrasensory perception of everything that's happening around me. You know, and then finally, live discovery. That live discovery is how do I live with that constant curiosity where if I can come from a centered place, I can now, from an unattached ideally, I'm more committed than ever and less attached than ever. I can now experience the world as it's occurring and not my projection of it.
I was going to actually just make some notes on what you had just said there, extending key. And your other point was, after extending key was?
Live discovery. Get centered, extend key, live discovery.
I just want to go back into these three pieces that you were just talking about, and I hope I got them here. But so first one was get centered, two was extend key, and then the third is live discovery. So you're going pretty deep here, and it's funny, like you are not the stereotypical or what people would think of the stereotypical Navy SEAL, right? It's like, you know, you're getting centered, extending key, and living discovery, where most people think you just shoot your way out of this stuff. but it's really, really awesome. But I would love for you to just maybe share some, you know, either an experience or some tips for people, because, you know, look, the getting centered piece, my interpretation of that is, you know, find a way, whether it's meditation or what it is, but I don't want to make assumptions on that.
Yeah, of course. Well, first I would say, ideally, I'm much more the SEAL that you will encounter if you meet a real one. I think Hollywood does a terrible job of conveying the SEAL community. So just to make sure, like, shout out to the boys and the men and that I learned from and that taught me that ideally that's the essence of what we're sending in as ambassadors of the United States when we go out into other countries. And so that's crucially important to get that. Like, ideally, that's how we show up, right? Because I think Hollywood tends to, in the desire to make characters simple, the mindless automatons that only do exactly what they're told. And candidly, you can't solve impossible problems if you're moving that way. So first, ideally, I'm honoring the lineage that I've been trained and learned from. And then second, you know, going into getting centered is one of the most fascinating, it's two words, it's one of the most fascinating descriptions of the ineffable that you could possibly, you know, talk about. And that's why I've spent years with my mentor training on what is getting centered. At the most basic, can I walk into a room from my center? And it's funny because inherently, if you tell somebody get centered, they'll sit up more correctly. They'll end up getting to the point where they're centered over their body, right? They're now in a position that's more ready. And you won't even have to describe anything that they should do. That's just inherently, we all kind of have this sense of where is our center? Since you would say your center is like right below your navel, right? Where you can kind of feel here's the center. But for me, that center is, okay, how many times have I spent hundreds of hours preparing for a presentation to walk into the room with my hair on fire, like bust open the door off center and kind of confused instead of like taking that moment before? I usually try and find, whether people call it a green room or a closet or whatever I can do, to just be quiet for a minute. And I always ask myself, who do I want to be when I walk into this room? Because to me, it's kind of like a Rubik's cube of options I have. Do I need to be a father, a mentor, a SEAL, a son, a teacher, a guide, like a consigliere, a consultant? Those are all different faces that might be appropriate or inappropriate for the situation. So which one's going to be useful here, right? And then how do I now walk in from center versus coming in off balance, off key? And I, you know, at the Naval Academy, I used to chop, leaves would chop, which means fundamentally run everywhere you go. So I'd bust into rooms. You know, now you're hitting the brakes completely kind of off as I walk in, and the worst possible way to start a process instead of walking in like calm and aware and ready. And so first is, how do I get to that place where now, ideally, I'm present? So for me, like, that's that time domain of, I'm not regretful of the past. I'm not anticipatory or fearful of the future. I now get to the point where I'm present, because then I have all of my capabilities here present with you, instead of being spread across three different time domains. So now I'm only 10% here in the present with you, because everything else is scattered, everything else is happening around me. So how do I get to the point where I can do that? For me, it's that place of quiet. It took me years to even realize that quiet or that peace was such a crucial piece of that. And it's not, my first time, my brother told me, hey, I just want to be peaceful. I'm like, well, but it's like a motivated peace, right? Like, you got to be motivated. And he was like, just peace. And so it was fascinating. I mean, I think you were at the event where I kind of spent 37 years of my life running from scarcity. Everything I'd done had been making sure, hey, if I wasn't fast enough, one of my guys would get killed because I didn't make the right decision fast enough. So everything was from scarcity. And then we were at a board break ceremony, and everything we wrote up front, what are you scared of? And I wrote like scarcity, and here's all the things, like covered that whole board in the front. And then what are you really drawn toward? And it was that abundance. And it was that, okay, my son, I think, was two or three at the time. So like Connor. And, you know, as you know, we punched through the board to the other side. And I was terrified. I thought, am I going to be as motivated if I'm not motivated by fear anymore? And that courageous and difficult switch to being pulled by abundance is infinitely more exciting, fun, rewarding, and fulfilling, and was harrowing. And so like that, you know, to me, getting centered is part of that, getting present to what am I afraid of and how do I now get fully open and aware of everything around me.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, when you say that, it made me reflect on my past in that I think the first part of my career, like I felt like I was always behind, a little less than everybody else, not as smart. I'm a college dropout. Certainly I've had some successes and some wins at my back to propel me forward. And I've had a lot of good people to help support me through the process. But I always felt like if I ever lost that edge of scarcity or fear of not being enough, then I would lose my edge or my drive and determination to be more. But in fact, like as I've matured and grown up, I think, and realized abundance is good if you utilize it for others. And it actually drives me more. I'm probably more hungry today to accomplish things because of a state of abundance than I ever could have from a state of scarcity or fear.
Absolutely.
I love that, like getting centered in that way. And the way you actually talked about those three time domains, which I was, that was really interesting because I've never heard it from that perspective, which is, you know, like so many people spend time in their past and there's, you know, the only thing in the past is literally pain unless you're just in there momentarily to relive the experience so that you can learn and utilize it as a tool today in the present. And if you spend too much time in the future, it can be a bit of a waste of your time and focus because it hasn't happened yet. And so you spend either time dwelling on it or dreaming about it. And that takes you away from the focus of doing what's right now in the present in front of you. Thank you for sharing that because I love that wasting that energy of being in three time domains is really, really telling. So appreciate that. Can you talk to me a little bit about this extending key? Because that is something I'm sure, did you learn that from Tom Crum? Is that your mentor, Tom Crum? That guy is fire.
Yes, it gives me language. I mean, the best approximation I can start with would be is when you're on board the helicopter and you get ready to fly off in the darkness. And of course, you've got the rotors of the helicopter spinning up. And so you've got the dual rotor MH-47. So these huge helicopters, dual rotors spinning around and the sand hits the outside of the rotor. So you've got, as you're pitch black, you're walking out to the helicopter, you've got this little ring of electricity, like around the, like little two rings of lightning aboard the helicopters. You get on board. And of course, you're completely adrenalized because you're about to go into combat. And you sit, you know, much like you and I are in here, but you're sitting across the helicopter from them. And then your night vision's in the way. So if you look across the helicopter, kind of pick up your night vision and look 45 degrees off and then give them, so you can look eye to eye and give a quick head nod. And that head nod, you know, always meant my life and yours and mine. And that was what gave me the confidence every night when those 5 to 10 helicopters would fly off in the dark and say, Kirk, can you take on anything that comes your way tonight? I'd say, absolutely. I said, do you have any idea how? I have no idea. Because the planning is essential, but the plan itself is worthless, right? Because the moment that you land, you never know what's going to happen next. But it was that extending key was that moment, that head nod said, like, I won't come home without you and you won't come home without me. And that's the part for me that created that field where you could do superhuman things with very average humans because each person was in full surrender to each other, right? Each person knew that they were committed to each other more than their own individual life. And then paradoxically, because you're now functioning holistically as a team in the present with no fear of the or regret, you're now faster than everybody else and everybody comes home. But it's only because you're able to get to that point of full surrender. So I wouldn't have had that language for it then, but I would say now that would be the most embodied example of extending key. The one that happened for me about 2 years ago was I'd been training with Sensei for over a decade and we were doing an exercise he calls polishing the rice. And so you're kind of moving your hands along the earth with, you know, about, you know, 18 inches off the ground, 12 inches up, depending on how strong and flexible you are. So he was clearly lower than I was. And so I was moving my hands and all of a sudden I got this wave of energy hit me. And I was like, wow, that was on. I had two reactions. One, what was that? And two, what have I been doing for 10 years? And so it's kind of one of those increasing levels of awareness when I'm aware of what's happening around me at a fully different level. And it's awesome. Like this morning I got up getting ready for this podcast and I was aware of the sunrise and the slight wind from the southeast and all of the beauty that was around me that many days, if I'm focused on the mission, I might miss. And so that awareness is, how do I have that full context for everything that's around me? Extending key for me is the ability to feel more powerfully that which is around me and extending it, extend life force, extend that confidence, extend that belief in others to them, right? Whether it's, and that's what you've done brilliantly for me is, hey, I believe in you. I see you. I love that wave and particle experiment from physics where a wave does not become a particle until it's observed. And once it's observed, then it exists, right? So when all humans want to be seen, heard, and understood, and suddenly when someone sees us, like I love, someone told me, to be seen, heard, or understood by one other fundamentally changes everything. It changes our faith, our confidence, our belief. And so your ability to do that on behalf of each other, to me, is fundamentally giving each other love, giving each other life.
Which is a beautiful state to be in. And there are some people who, you know, maybe listening that would be, are stuck in, you know, because they're not seen, heard, or understood by another, or they don't feel seen and understood because they could be, but they're not feeling it. or their perception is that they're not, that they fall into a bit of a blame, you know, environment. I'm curious, you know, with this extending key and then this building this life force, what could the listeners do at home? Because I think you're hitting on a really important piece. You know, this is to me a and I'm just riffing here, but it is a core substance or center of confidence. It's a core center of, you know, showing up energetically for one, whether it's in your intimate relationship or whether it's at work and really supporting somebody who is struggling with something. And I'd be curious if you have experience or if working with sensei, and when we say the word sensei, we're talking about Tom Crum, and you can, you know, Google him. Could you maybe give some experiences of how somebody could, one could practice that type of process and start to build on it? Because it's not, you don't do it once and it comes. It's something that you have to practice over and over and over again. So I think it aligns a lot with, you know, we've just had Greg Wells on our podcast, and, you know, he talked about, you know, he talks a lot about breath work and moving from beta into theta and all that kind of stuff. And I think this is an interesting extension that kind of runs parallel with some of his work.
I mean, the most clear for any of the parents out there, when you started to ask that, was like every single morning that I'm home, my whole goal is each of the five kids, like pick them up off the ground. And my son will gladly tell you that he's taller than me now, but I can still lift him. But it's that embodied lift off the ground. For me, it's crucially important. Like, they're not touching anything on the planet, but it's like a full bear hug. You know, I love for each of the kids, and it's fascinating. My son and my third daughter, Abby, both go to ground. Like, you can feel them go. Like, they're like grounded for the day. My oldest daughter and 7-year-old Olivia Grace, they both expand. They both open and expand. You can feel them go. You can feel them open, right? And Ellie, she's three. She's an autonomous weapon system, so hard to tell. For me, that's that. You can literally feel like that transference of life force. And ideally at night, the exact same close of just hand on heart for 5 to 10 seconds, you know, to get coherently aligned or longer. Those for me are the most intimate and emotional moments, you know, of my life, getting to spend time with them, you know, these little humans. And you're like, wow, like what they'll do. And just sitting there and imagining, like, who knows the universe that they're going to see, watching everything change so fast. Like, it'll be so exciting to see the world that they live into and move into. That is the most embodied. Of course, the other, like the dyadic relationship with my wife, with Julia, right? Like 20 years across, she made it through every single deployment, right? And she did, you know, the most impossible things you could ask her to do. And then just awesome, laying in bed together going, wow, like we survived all that, right? And then the moment it can be present and aware of that, just a miracle.
Yeah, I love the hug thing, because, you know, Tennille and I do it, and I don't know if listeners, you've ever done it, and maybe how often is really the question. Had a abnormally long hug with your child or with your intimate other, or honestly, just a friend, where you have this like abnormally long hug, and, you know, you hug and then it feels normal, and then you continue into that space and holding it, and then it feels weird. and then there's this amazing thing that I find happens, which is, you know, you go from this feeling of weird to centeredness would probably be a good word, or this, you know, just this level of, you know, peace and comfort and being settled in that moment. So it's a good analogy. Yeah. Thanks for sharing the experience.
And I go there because love is my primary language. I love it. Just to make sure that everybody doesn't turn off the podcast, thinks it's all airy fairy. It also works for power, right? And so, you know, I love true power is energy flowing fully toward purpose. And so, you know, then they'll teach an exercise where most of the times in life, and you'll be listening, so I'll try and describe it, but like if you have your arm extended and someone's trying to bend your arm, right? Someone strong like Dwayne, so, you know, imagine some. And so we tend to think, okay, I have to fight that. So I get rigid and I get tight. And in that rigidity, we actually have weakness, because we can't do it forever. We can fight for a while, but eventually breaks down. And then the other option is like, okay, no resistance, right? No resistance is, of course, nothing. We're just loose. And so you think this is an impossible solution. Don't resist, but resist. And for me, the moment that we get into it, imagine energy flowing up and through me, through the universe, like a water coming through a hose. Then all of a sudden, it's a fundamentally different experience, because now anything that touches my arm is also now part of that. Is now part of that key, is part of the energy. And so if I look out in the horizon and put the most important thing on the planet to me, and I'm now sending energy toward it, and someone tries to hang off my arm, it's a completely different experience. And so I want to get like, yes, like I love the experience of it in a the most intimate kind of heart expanding way. And it also works for every endeavor.
What was that saying before? You said true power is energy moving towards purpose?
Flowing freely toward purpose. Yes.
True power is energy flowing freely towards purpose. And so you're describing that as, you know, in the arm situation, is that similar in the, I mean, I've done the exercises where, you know, you're grounding yourself, and maybe this is not the same, and it's okay if it's not, but where you're grounding yourself and, you know, where you're just standing and somebody can come and lift you up off the ground. But then when you ground your center into the ground and really focus on it, it's like if you go and try, and people should try this at home because it's a really interesting experiment. But you, somebody, whatever, doesn't matter what they weigh, 150 pounds, and you know, you can lift them up easily. But then you get them to really focus on their grounding and their center into the ground, and like their feet are anchored into it, and you go to try to lift them up, and it is like much more difficult, if not impossible.
Yeah, no, I love when the unliftable sensei, right? When all of a sudden, and it's not from getting tense. People think it's getting tense, but tense is actually really easy to lift. It's actually connecting and being grounded at a completely different level. So absolutely.
Yeah. And then you talked about lived discovery.
My lived discovery is part of like that's full curiosity, right? Being fully open, present, and accepting of, hey, whatever happened this way. And as a SEAL, I've always loved the getting out of the one in a million chance of getting out of a situation. In some recent crises I've gone through, I've never appreciated the one in a billion chance of that occurring, right? I've had to learn to appreciate the miracles in both directions, because without everything I've ever been, every mistake I've ever made, every relationship I've ever been in, I wouldn't have ever gotten to that situation to start with, to then get the miracle of getting out. And for me, that's the moment I can be curious, accepting, and open to everything. Everything changes. And that is a work in progress for me, as you know.
That's got to be tough. To me, that has to be, I don't want to say one is harder than the other, but if, you know, in lived discovery, that has to be a little bit tough, because, you know, and you used three words. One, first one was curious. And what were the other two?
I don't remember.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. That's what makes you awesome, buddy, is this stuff just flows out of you. So it's like in the lived discovery, to me, it's like, you know, if you're going to live curious and you're going to live free, many people can't breach that until they have a level of certainty in whatever they're at and whatever is happening around them. And to me, it seems like certainty is going to be the bubble breaker on that.
100%. All my desire for certainty and control has to be lost. And I can feel it when I try and get back the control. And that used to be for me, I'd be like really good if I'm living the plan, and really good in chaos. And I'd hate that moment between where we'd shift from the plans going haywire into chaos. And so that is the piece that I've most had to continue to surrender, is my control. And that doesn't mean I continuously build like, okay, here's the best possible plan, vision, and mission, and then be open and ready for it to be expanded, be infinitely greater than anything I ever could have planned for.
Can you share like, what are some of the things that you've done? Like if you've just admitted kind of that, you know, that's the difficult part in living discovery.
The hardest part.
So I'm curious, what are some of the things that you're working on to help you through that process? Because I think this is a piece where in business, control is, you know, in the beginning, people start as a one-man show and then a two-person and three-person team, and they still can maintain the control of the environment and what is happening, and they have influence in every area. But as the business starts to grow beyond them, they've got to figure out ways that, you know, they've got to give up. My mentor said to me once, he's like, you can have anything, but you can't have everything. And you have to decide, what are you willing to give up in order to grow? And he wasn't talking about giving up physical stuff, or he was talking about me giving up my control, my need for control, my need for certainty, and to have things done just a certain way in order to be able to grow an organization beyond myself. And so I'm curious, what are some of the things that you've done to kind of help yourself through that process of living discovery?
The most powerful I can think of to start with is always make plans that are infinitely greater than myself. because if it's something that can be done within the capabilities that I have, then or the team that I have, then it doesn't require me to stretch. So I love picking huge goals that are far beyond anything I could do, because that forces me into, there's this tiny part that I can do, and there's this huge component that I have to hope for that space for grace where something will unfold itself that will allow it to occur. And that usually means, okay, how do I now say no versus not yet? It's one of my huge ones. We have not yet accomplished this. So who else do we need in the room? What didn't we think of? What needs to be created new that's never been done before? So then it drives better questions. Like one of the questions in business we asked, the closure of Broadway was a massive crisis for my business. We run, you know, we have a fund that invests in Broadway shows. I think we had 30 or 40 shows playing at the time. And then the whole world closes down. And so one of the first questions that we asked ourselves was, how do we keep Broadway open when it's closed? Right? Which is an absurd question, right? Because it's impossible until you go, okay, well, is there a possibility that we could now take and capture a Broadway show and then bring it to people at home? And so historically, you'd never been able to capture Broadway shows because there's great complexities and all the different rights and all the different stakeholders and kind of how it's going to get done. But now all that was shifted because now everyone wanted to bring the arts to the world. And so we're able to do live capture screen production. You saw Hamilton really changed the game when they first published on Disney, but all of a sudden the entire world changed. And it really went from fear that if people saw a show online, they wouldn't go see it in person. But the data actually shows the opposite. The data shows if someone would go see a show, if there's another night they can't make it, they would love to see it, you know, at their home. And if they see it at home and they might not have seen the show otherwise, then they'll go see it in person. So fear was holding back the expansion of art, the expansion of story. And so by finding that critical moment where everyone was afraid, that's where I love crisis, because that danger and opportunity. The opportunity was to innovate and bring the art to more places than we've ever brought ever before.
Can you take a minute and just maybe lend some perspective to what you did? So you got out of the military, out of the SEALs. And then, you know, you did some consulting work, but you started this fund. And are you guys not the largest Broadway producers in Broadway? Like, I don't want to say something that's not true, so I'll let you kind of frame it.
Well, for sure, by most capital allocated presently, yes. But I would say the most simple way to say it is I used to run counterinsurgencies against terrorists. And as I left the SEALs, I was blown away. I thought everyone's got to be having these deep conversations like we're having now. Everyone's got to be trying to figure out, how do I grow? How do I adapt? How do I evolve? How do I make the world a better place? And I was shocked many of the conversations were not happening, nor were people aware they need to happen. And so, as you said, I started with consulting and I realized, like, okay, there's a small population and percentage you can have the epic direct conversations with. But if the house is on fire, we got to get everybody out. And so as I went to my MBA, because I realized I spoke English, but didn't speak the language of business, I first met my partner, Hunter Arnold, and when he told me about Broadway, I was blown away by the opportunity to tell stories at scale. You know, my favorite class, the Naval Academy, is a class on Shakespeare. I remember getting to the end of one of the plays and going, wow, the catharsis, maybe that applies in my life. And so if I can show, not tell, because if I tell someone, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still, someone has to decide whether what I say is true or not. And in today's world of misinformation, disinformation, what is truth, that becomes harder and harder. But if I can show them something, if I can tell a story at the end and go, maybe that applies in my life. In the first movie we did in the shutdown of the pandemic was A Christmas Carol, right? Because to me, Scrooge is the ultimate unredeemed. He's the ultimate, like, terrible human. And if in the course of one night, he can now become someone that becomes more generous and helpful than anyone, then we all can. And so that's what I love about the power of stories, was we can now go from a disempowered state to an empowered state, because we can see one person do it. And that's why I love actors and actresses, to me, hold a coherent field that is unbelievable. I mean, it's harder to get onto a Broadway stage than it is to get into the NFL. Like, it's such a selective process. And you watch them when you're live with 1,100 of your closest friends in that field, you can't walk out but feel inspired. And so to me, that was the most powerful tool for influence that I could see, was how do we now tell stories, allow us to have a common context with each other, and walk away going, each person will take from the story that which is most relevant to them in their life at that moment. And that they get to decide that.
Right. Yeah. Just to walk people through the understanding, like, you create a fund that is the most capital allocated towards Broadway, and the pandemic hits and your business goes to, like, complete zero at the time, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And then you guys had to sort that all out. And of course, what you just described, which was that, you know, ultimate question of is, how do we make Broadway exist when Broadway doesn't exist, or whatever the question was? So,
how do we keep it open when it's closed? Yes.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. How do we keep it open when it's closed? And it's like, you know, it's a huge question, but a lot of people wouldn't endeavor to ask those questions. They just accept what's given to them. But this is a good example of the living discovery, right? Is, you know, people just go, well, okay, we'll close down and hopefully the government will give us a check and help support us through this process. And then you guys kind of spin it on its head and start to embody what you're talking about, which is probably all those three things, is really trying to find that getting centered because the shit's hitting the fan, extending key, and then live discovery and getting to your place, to the self, to the place where you can ask those questions of how do we keep this open when it's closed.
No, exactly right. The first part was state management for ourselves. Like, it was beyond anything we'd ever, we'd done all kinds of contingency planning from the Navy SEALs. So I did tons of contingency planning. What's the worst case scenario? What could possibly go wrong? The world closing for a pandemic didn't make the list. So this was, so we first had to go, wow, what do we do now? Right. And get centered in ourselves. And it's very easy, to your point about, if I want certainty and control, there's super easy solutions. Okay. Broadway's closed. That's out of our control. We're shutting the fun down. We're quitting everything. Cause then I get to now live in that place. Things happen to me. The environment shifted. I didn't anticipate it. That happened to me. So then I can get a great deal of certainty out of, it wasn't my fault we failed. Right. But we had to first give up blame and say, okay, I didn't know this would happen, but how do we now get to that by me state? Or now, how do I now give up blame and say, what can we do about it? So then we tried to pull all that decision-making up to us. And then you have to give up the hardest part, give up control, get to through me. Okay, who could do this the best, right? And that's the most fun part in life and in business, is when I go, I become that copper wire, that something comes to me and goes through me to the person that's most qualified to get it done. And that's when everything changes. When all of a sudden they get exposure to an opportunity that they've waited their entire life for, I now get out of the way and it doesn't have me doing something I'm not qualified to do. And everything transforms, but requires that living into the question or living the discovery. That means I have to hold the space for grace long enough for something to unveil itself. And it's really fun to tell you the story now, 3 years later. You know, it was harrowing at the time, but it was the most fun conversations I've had, when many people would say, is the fun closed? Is it over? I'm like, no, that's why we did portfolio theory. And that's why, working at every level, like, we had the insurance in place for when the production's closed, working with the government to help develop like the Shuttered Venues Operator Grant, grant we'd never seen before, nor had ever chanced that it would ever occur in the history of time. So all of those little pieces came together, and it's never one solution. It's kind of that Lego block that all of a sudden gets to a place you never could expect in any other way.
Right. Yeah. It's an incredible story what you guys did there. And then you went off and created, like you said, the Christmas Carol on via television. I'm curious, are you using VR or augmented reality in anything coming up in the future, or where are you guys sitting with that kind of technology, or where you're taking the fund, the Broadway fund?
Well, it's really exciting to say, okay, how do you stay on the cutting edge of where the world's going? And so the other thing that during the pandemic was, a lot of the, in Europe, has really been piloting a lot of the immersive shows. There's productions where now either you're playing the board game of Monopoly, so now you're no longer in the audience just watching, you're now participating in the production. So Monopoly, you roll the board, the characters are the caricatures of like Mr. Monopoly or the race car or whatever your piece would have been on the board. And so then every time you land on a spot, you go in and you solve a puzzle. So now you're working in teams to solve a puzzle, expanded us from just B2C, where you're interacting with people, into B2B, where now we're also interacting with businesses because they can do team building events. We're now building Alice's Underworld Adventures, where you choose to chase Alice or you chase the white rabbit. So for me, the exciting thing on the human transformation, you go from watching things to now you're participating. You're now taking actions. You're taking steps. We recently gone into like aerial drones in the sky. We talked about going back to my old world, right? Where now you have aerial drones in the sky. And so you've got light from stars that have burned out thousands of years ago, just reaching the world. And now you've got 1,200 drones in the air telling a story at the same time. So it's really exciting to see where it goes. I think we'll get to the point very soon where you can now say, okay, I want to have, you know, the personalized story version of Hadestown. We're not there yet, but I think it'll get really exciting where you and I used to do visualization exercises. We'll be able to have embodied visualization exercises for our kids and for all the people we love.
You won't see the end of Broadway because everybody's still going to want to see a live show. But are you now saying that people will be able to interact in these kinds of things in a virtual reality world, or I guess the metaverse, or is it going that far?
We're not there yet. I mean, of course, I think everything will continue to progress and evolve. I have no idea exactly how, but it's really exciting to see. Probably within the next year to 18 months, we'll be able to potentially have people have at home put on goggles and have someone sitting so that they get to view as if they were in the first seat of one of the auditoriums. So you can either have the exclusive in person where you're in a coherent field with everybody else, or you can do it from your home. All that's projection, of course, but like super exciting to see where it can go.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are revolutionizing what you're doing in Broadway. And I will say, you know, I don't have regrets in this world, but I do have missed opportunities. And being an early investor in your fund is a missed opportunity for that. that falls on my shoulders. So anyways, I don't know how we got on your topic here, fund. You'd made a comment and I thought people should have some perspective of what you're doing beyond. I know you still do a little bit of speaking, but you spend the lion's share of your time in the fund now. I'm not an investor, so I have nothing in this, but I know that your Broadway fund is doing unbelievably well. Do you want to just, what's the Broadway fund? How could they reach out to you?
We're happy to help anybody that wants to invest in the arts. So
okay.
You can just reach out at kurt@tbdtheatricals.com.
tbdtheatricals.com. Great. There you go, guys. Kurt with a C, C-U-R-T. Dude, thanks again for being here. Can't thank you enough. I'm always excited to talk to you, as I said. So we really appreciate you.
Thank you. Thanks for all you're doing. Cheers to the leaders.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Hey, everyone. Thanks very much for listening and tuning in to our conversation with Kurt Cronin. Always awesome to hear his perspective on life coming from the Navy SEALs and transitioning into the business career and life and all that is entailed in that. Tune in next week where we talk about some captivating things inside of, you know, overcoming your fears and dealing with your insecurities and working more on that transition and struggling through business and accomplishing your goals outside of a realm of where you used to being. So it's a fantastic conversation. Always love having Kurt on. Take care. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. I appreciate you being with us. If you found value in the show and know a friend or a coworker who could benefit from the conversation, please share the link via text or on social media. Remember, each share creates a ripple effect of knowledge and inspiration. We'll see you next week.
The views, information, or opinions expressed by guests during the Business of Doing Business podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Dwayne Kerrigan and his affiliates. Dwayne Kerrigan, or the Business of Doing Business podcast, is not responsible for and does not verify the accuracy of any of the information contained in the podcast series. The primary purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. Listeners are advised to consult with a qualified professional or specialist before making any decisions based on the content of this podcast.